This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's Monday morning, and I'm Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
It's
and
Monday.
I'm Jamie Jennings.
My favorite time of year.
That did it by itself. I had nothing to do with that. There's a ghost in the... I honest to God was not touching that computer. Okay, let's see if that happens again.
Okay, well, here, let's try again. I'm Jamie Jennings, and I'm coming at you live from Flag Is Up Farms in Solvang, California, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for April 3rd, episode 1667, brought to you today by Omega Alpha Equine. Here we go. Ready? Good morning, horse world.
It's Monday.
There we go.
Monday is my favorite time of year.
This is Horses in the Morning with your lovable hosts, Jamie Jennings.
I am the queen. You listen to me.
I'm sorry that people are so jealous of me, but I can't help it that I'm popular.
Glenn the Geek.
You look especially radiant today, Your Grace.
I'm going to do a terrific show today because I'm good enough, and doggone it, people like me.
Happy Monday.
Every time, so Glenn.
Well, all right, now I've completely turned the sound to that computer off that apparently is possessed. So
I was like, man, he already fired me, didn't tell me in the pre-show meeting.
Oh yeah, well, people are lucky we're here. Let's just put it that way. We're just lucky.
Well,
we're
and
here.
if you notice, I sound a little different. It's because I, in the midst of packing for California, trying to get my kid all set up for 3 weeks of me being gone. I had packed the horse stuff. Pack for yourself for 3 weeks is a lot. I forgot my microphone. So
it's only your job.
Dear sweet Debbie is bringing hers. So I will be back to normal. Right now, I'm currently on the office phone here at Flag Is Up.
Well, we can hear you good. So that's good. We tried Jamie's cell phone, but we couldn't use that because it sounded like you were in a muffled garbage can. And apparently there's a reason for that.
Yeah, so actually it was when we were doing the adoption and had the social worker in our house for our home study, I hear a noise, and I'm talking at the kitchen table to this person who's judging my parenting and, like, staring at me, you know, and looking at my home, and Lucas is down on the floor, and he's like, Mom, your phone's broken. I said, I'm sorry, what? And I walk over, by the way, this is like 3 days after I got it. I walk down, and he's like, there's a big crack in the screen, and I said, I'm trying to be cool, right? I'm like, what happened? He's like, I bit it. He bit my phone with his sharp little baby teeth and cracked the whole thing. And here I am, like, I have to react in a very calm, loving manner.
Understanding, loving, like, parental way.
Oh, Lucas, thank you for being honest. I appreciate it. Yes. Okay, hand me mommy's phone back. Okay, thank you. Just sit down.
Now go
like,
get your...
After he left, I was like, no!
Now go get your piggy bank because you're buying me a new one.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. So I've been dealing with a phone that you can only actually use while it's on speaker.
And even then, it's shady. It's pretty shady on speaker. Oh. Well, you are at Flag Is Up. You made it there. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. We have a lot to go over, actually, this morning. A lot to do today. And Jennifer's going to tell us about that. And then we're gonna get caught up here.
Woohoo! Coming up on today's Omega Alpha Equine, Dr. Chang is going to spill the beans on antioxidants. Jen Johnson is going to tell us about the 6 feet under, 6 feet on the ground, not under.
God.
And the Wacky World of Horse Nation finds Leslie chatting up Keith Swenson about riding horses for fun in Mongolia. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
For a minute there, I thought we had that burial lady back that did the... No. That's good.
6 feet on the ground.
Got it.
On.
Got it.
Important.
All right. Yeah. Well, my Daily Winnie is a happy retirement to Auditor Jody Hawk, who retired, I think it was Friday. I saw her posting, and she was so excited that she's retiring from her job and going into retirement life. So happy retirement to Jody and happy birthday to Anne Marie. I'd play the music for you, but that ain't working either. So Jamie will just sing
you
for
you. You just don't want to hear Chili.
That's right. I just can't play it. So happy birthday, Anne Marie, and the host of the podcast once a month, Tanya Johnston, who is a mental skills coach, whose episode just came out on Saturday, is also her birthday today, too. So happy birthday to all of you.
Now, you know that I cannot come all the way out here and not have drama.
Of course.
So my
10-hour drive, alone, by yourself, there's going to be drama.
Through L.A., oh, my God. My body hurts because it was so stressful. But we're going to back up a little bit, and I'm going to give my Daily Winnie out to my veterinarian, who came out on a Saturday night.
Of course.
Thank you very much. So I was trying to be a good horse owner, a good mother, a good guest, a good visitor, and I brought Zeus with me out here to Flag Is Up. Mainly, I mean, obviously it'd be fun to ride him while he's here, but mainly because Chad was like, if you're going to leave for 3 weeks, you have to take that one with you. Because as you guys know, Zeus can be a little bit of a management nightmare. So Zeus and I came out, and I realized that he, when I adopted him, he was vaccinated, but I haven't vaccinated him, and it's spring, and time to get vaccinated. He needed a health certificate, all that kind of stuff. So I have the vet out on Thursday, and Dr. Hendricks gives him the vaccines and gives him the blood work, does everything that he needs to do for his trip. I give him Friday off. Saturday afternoon, I'm like, I'm going to get one more jump school in before I go to the farm, because it's not really a jumping facility. So I am brushing him, and I notice the swelling. His whole neck where he got the shot is swollen. Big. Hot. Oh, God. No, I'm leaving tomorrow! So I call out the vet. She gets there like 20 minutes later because she lives really close. She's awesome. So she is like, okay, well, we're going to have to ultrasound this. Because I guess there's two types of reactions that horses can have. And you've seen the ones where they give Banamine in the muscle and the whole thing, it like comes this big gassy problem underneath there. And
the entire neck turns into a rotten smelling balloon. It's gross.
Yes, exactly. So there was that option, or just an abscess from the shot, or just a reaction. We just didn't know. So she puts an ultrasound probe on it. And this is as stressful as an ultrasound on a horse's neck can get, is we're looking for fluid, which means it's just an abscess, or gas, which means it's that horrible, I don't even know what it's called, but it'll like, you know, could potentially kill your horse. So we're ultrasounding it. And of course he doesn't want to be touched and he's sore. And it turns out that it's an abscess. There's some fluid, just a minor amount of fluid. So he caught it really quick. He got a bunch of antibiotics, but the poor thing, Jennifer, it was awful. He couldn't put his head down. So I'm walking, because she was like, on the phone, she's like, can he eat? And I was like, let me take him over to the grass. He stood over the grass looking at it and pawing. Because
he couldn't reach it.
Aww. It was so sad. So I'm like, let me get you some hay. And I put the hay in a wheelbarrow. And for the first time ever, he didn't turn the wheelbarrow over. He was actually contentedly munching out of the wheelbarrow. Oh, it was so terrible. And of course, I'm like, and now I'm going to put you in a trailer for 10 hours.
So, well, he doesn't have to put his head down to eat.
Well, you would think that. So then I've got, the story keeps going. So this new trailer that I have, you don't have to do hay nets, but there's hay bags, like a bag right under where they would be tied up. So they don't have to pull out of a hay net. They just eat right out of the bag. So I'm like, this is great. So he doesn't have to use his neck to eat. It's just right there in front of him. So I load him. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. It's pitch dark. I go in the house. I say goodbye to Chad, goodbye to Lucas. And he walks me out and we hear this noise. Oh God. I walk over. That horse has been in the trailer 5 minutes and has already got his front leg stuck in the hay bag and has ripped it off of the thing. So I have to climb in the trailer and in the partition next to him. I am trying to lift his feet out of being tangled in this hay bag that he has shredded in 5 minutes. So needless to say, I had to stop every, I don't know, every hour or so and go back and just let him eat from my hand. I was like, I'm not giving you another one, you big jerk. You already ruined one. So
it's good that didn't happen when you started out, though, and you didn't notice for 4 hours.
Chad said that the first thing he goes, good thing it happened here.
Yeah.
And he goes, and I would like to point out, this is another reason why you are taking this horse with you.
That horse is never allowed to stay home without you.
No, no, I'm not taking no. that horse ever again.
Absolutely not. But the good thing about, you know, you were here when there was a drought, but there was so much rain this spring here that Zeus is currently out in a pasture. He made it safe and sound. He actually looks a ton better. The antibiotics took hold, like everything. His neck looks better. He's out in a field of green grass right now that is up to his knees, and he is buried his face in it, and he's very happily eating after a long drive. And I'm worried he's going to get scratches from the tall grass.
Scratches will be the least of his problems. Horses, scratches are minor. That's not something you have to worry about.
I know.
Colic, it's from eating too much green grass, that's another story.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to get him in right after the show. But it was definitely an adventure driving through L.A., and snaking your way through Los Angeles and the traffic accidents everywhere, and I'm trying not to hit traffic, and I'm up and down rerouting on my phone, and the maps are going crazy, and I'm like, as long as I'm heading north or west, I'm like, I'm heading the correct direction. So it was a very, you know, it's hard when, and then in a
but that's
horse
not
trailer
a
in
fun
California,
drive in a car.
No,
up that road up to their house is not a fun drive in a car. Yeah, I can't
and
imagine
the worst
a
part is
four-horse trailer.
When anybody towing anything in California has to go 55. And I got a ticket for going 62 one time. So I'm like, 55, staying alive.
Is that right? And everybody else is doing 90.
You got it. And it is terrifying. And then they're doing 90, and then they realize they have to cut in front of you. I don't know how many times I had to slam on the brakes. And I was going 55. Like, why would you cut me off and slam on the brakes?
You know, I was just thinking, speaking of people pulling out in front of you, I saw one of our auditors, I don't know if you saw the auditor page today, but Emma, who lives in New Zealand, had an accident. She was hauling her float and her pickup truck, and somebody pulled out in front of her. And, you know, everybody's okay, and the horse is okay and everything, but, you know, smashed in the front of the pickup truck. Why do people insist on pulling out in front of trucks and horse trailers? They insist on doing it.
Well, it's like, I'm leaving so much room between the car in front of me and the traffic, you know, because I don't want to slam on the brakes. I'm just going to cruise along at 2 miles an hour. And if they get a little further ahead of me, I don't care. That doesn't exist, especially in Los Angeles. People go, oh, there's space. I'm like, you're not going any further.
Right, exactly. And you're not getting there any faster than I am.
Nothing is happening to you. Like, and then they would cut to the next one and then cut back. And it's like, I want to have signs all over the trailer. Like, my best friend is in here. Stay back. Don't cut me off.
This is California. Do you think they're really going to care?
No.
No.
Nobody cares. Yeah, no. They'll wreck reading all the signs on my trailer.
Well, I'm glad you're there. We're glad you're tucked in. We'll talk a little bit here. We'll talk in a little bit here about what you're up to at Flag Is Up. I wanted to mention, well, we had a couple news stories we have to get to right away. And that is the World Cup was over the weekend. We talked to Reese and Philip from there on Friday. And I have the results here for you. Dressage, the most decorated Olympic dressage athlete ever, is going to need some more room for some more trophies, because
sure
Germany's Isabel Wirth has already get this, 10 Olympic medals. And she tallied, are you ready, over the weekend at the World Cup, which some of the top riders in the world, a 90.7.
Oh my gosh.
90.7. That's just, I don't know, ridiculous. And her horse's Weingold Old was her ride for the weekend. So that's her third World Cup of victory. Now, really good news for the United States is Laura Graves came in second, and she had an 85.3. So she led four riders before. She went four riders before Isabel. She led with an 85.3, which is really, really good. She was the highest placed U.S. rider at the last Summer Olympics and won fourth place. And then she had a bronze in the team competition at the Olympics last time. So for her to come in second behind Isabel is pretty, pretty good. Carl Hester came in third from Great Britain. And did you see the story on Horse and Hound over the weekend about that little horse that Carl has at his barn?
No.
Jennifer, what was the story again about that little horse, Will I Grow?
You mean about Blueberry's second career?
Yes, Blueberry's second career.
Yeah. Well, Blueberry decided he really wasn't quite ready to retire yet, so he is going to take up eventing.
That's right.
Yeah, I did see that, Glenn. And are you believing it?
No, I was just kidding. I was just kidding. I only saw one of the April Fool's jokes about Goat Nation on Horse Nation. I didn't look the rest of the day then to see what the other April Fool's stuff, because they always come out with more than one.
Well, the good news is we're going to talk to Leslie, so we'll have to get a rundown.
We'll have to get caught up. On the jumping side, American McLean Ward clinched the jumping finals at the World Cup. That is his first World Cup win in 18 attempts. So, wow. You know, you would think McLean Ward would have won World Cup before, but apparently not. So his first World Cup win in 18 attempts. He was pretty happy, by the way. He, to get this, didn't commit a single rail in three rounds over 3 days, going clean in all five runs.
Oh, my gosh, that's amazing.
Not a single rail. At a jumps, and I watched a little bit of the video. Those are some big ass jumps at World Cup level.
Yeah, they're not small.
No. That's just awesome. Amazing. And then a guy from Switzerland, Romain Dugot, came in second, and then Sweden's Henrik von Eckermann came in third. So
I would like to apologize, by the way, for all of our international listeners, because I think you really mispronounce Isabel in German. I would like to apologize to our German listeners. And
that's right. Everybody that's international should know that we don't know how to pronounce names yet. Now, also, other big news coming out of the World Cup was not competition related, but was WEG related. They had a press conference. And
oh, wait, let me give you a World Cup one. I thought you were going to talk about Stefan Peters. Did you hear what he did?
No.
In Omaha?
Actually. No, I didn't.
For the first time ever, he competed in a helmet.
Really?
Yeah, he's the only one on the U.S. team who's been holding on to the top hat. And
I thought it was required now.
What?
I think they changed the rule. It's required now.
No, he made it his 2017 New Year's resolution to get rid of the top hat in FEI competitions.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, his quote was, "I hung on because of superstition. Over the years, I became less superstitious." Check this out. At first, it was my tailcoat that I had for 26 years.
The same one?
The same.
And he, like, rides a lot. It must have had, holes in it.
I know. And then I said the top hat was the final superstitious item I hung on to. I had a couple good tests with the helmet and decided to switch. He was also encouraged to wear a helmet by his U.S. teammates, Casey Perry Glass and Laura Graves.
Yeah, because Laura's always wearing.
And then he was getting all these messages on social media from parents. It's like, I received so many messages on Facebook, some firm, some kindly convincing me to wear a helmet because I am setting an example for children. Some mothers aggressively told me that I have to wear a helmet.
Were you writing to Stefan again?
Sorry, Stefan. I'm glad it worked.
It's the restraining order in place now.
It was funny. Not me. But I thought it was pretty awesome. So,
well, that's good.
Awesome
that
job.
Is good. Well, WEG announcements over the weekend. Some big announcements. First of all, they came out with the new logo, which is strange. It's got a horse with a rider's head coming out of the neck.
What?
Yeah, if I don't know if you can see the show notes, but if you look at the show notes,
very modern. It's modern.
Yeah, okay, it's modern. I'm not sure about it. but then we have our logo for the WEG show is a world with a horse's head coming out of the world. So, I guess that's kind of modern too. Well,
this is kind of cool. So it's like the horse's bust, and then it looks like she's standing on the other side leading it, and her head is underneath the
Or she's falling chin. Off and going to hit the ground soon. I'm not sure which.
Or that.
I'm not sure which. You can take a look at that. It's everywhere. It's been posted everywhere. But a couple of things that were announced over the weekend was Mark Bellissimo, who we've had on this show right before they made the announcement about getting the WEG, said that the performance venues will be completed and cross-country tracks, everything done by the end of 2017. He's guaranteeing. Hospitality, traffic, and parking, the accommodations were of utmost concerns to the committee, and they had to admit that they're thinking creatively and making certain concessions. Now, when we had Mr. Bellissimo on here, I busted his chops pretty good about hotels, didn't I? And how far people were going to have to drive. And he said, all to be fine. And everybody keeps saying, all to be fine. Well, that's one of the concessions. So now, if you're looking at going, due to the mass numbers needed to put the event of this magnitude on, officials say they've already booked 2,000-plus rooms in nearby towns for their staff, the spectator, or for their staff and the volunteers. The spectators should prepare themselves and plan ahead for a trek as far as Charlotte, a 75-mile drive. That is one of the concessions, is that the people coming are going to have to drive an hour to an hour and a half for hotels every day.
I don't even call that a concession. I call that you got screwed.
Yeah, well, and you know, he wasn't going to play that game with us before they got it. Remember, we talked to them right before they got it. And I was busting his chops pretty good about the lack of hotels. And everybody kept saying, oh, it'll be fine. No, it's not fine. There's not hotels. If they booked 2,000 rooms, they pretty much booked all the hotels in the nearby towns. I love this quote. It's certainly a more rural setting, the middle of nowhere, but the center of everything. Does that sound like a true politician's, by the way?
It's
the same thing about Lexington.
Yeah. It's the middle of nowhere, but the center of everything. So
Airbnb. That's all I can say. Airbnb.
Well, yeah, but they're all going to be 4,000 a night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine the difficulty just driving 75 miles and then you get off the freeway and then you've got all these back roads with 10 million other people.
Actually, there is a freeway right to the place and the state's putting in a couple more exits. It's four lane highway. So they're supposed to be putting in a couple of more exits.
Easy.
And apparently that part is going to be okay, but you still are going to have to drive. I hope that Stephanie was serious about having the host of the Horse Radio Network stay in her yard because we're pretty much camping. And then they announced the schedule, which had not been announced before. So the schedule is out for WEG, too. So if you're planning on wanting to start making plans and depending on which days you want to go, looks like it's starting out with Endurance's first day, which is interesting. They did not do it that way at WEG in 2010. Reining and dressage start first day. And then eventing starts the second day. They're going to run eventing second, third, and fourth days. So then this all will be starting September 11th is the opening ceremonies in 2018 and will run through the 23rd. They have one rest day in the middle. on a Monday, it looks like. And then they are ending, they always end with show jumping, they have paradressage, vaulting, driving, and all of those are at the end. And of course, it always ends with the big show jumping that right before the closing ceremonies. So that's how it'll work.
Now, you're the leg master here, so I have some questions. First of all, it seems like on the East Coast would be a good place for our European friends to fly in with their horses.
Charlotte.
However, do they have a horse facility to receive horses at Charlotte Airport?
They were discussing that. They're working on building a temporary facility, and I don't think it's even going to be at Charlotte. There's an airport that's out closer to Tryon that they're looking at trying, that I think has a long enough runway, that they're looking at building a temporary facility.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so they got to bring in, what, almost 1,000 horses. So, you know, and they're going to be coming, you know, some of them from the United States, but most of them aren't. So they have to be coming in from overseas. Now, Charlotte, as we know, is a huge airport. One of the biggest, actually. So, you know, again, I think all of those details are being worked out. We're supposed to be talking to the people from Tryon on the next WEG show. So we're hoping to get more details on all of this stuff, including volunteers. And I don't know where they're staying in their cars, I guess. I don't know. They did say they're going to build temporary housing on the facility for riders and grooms. So they're going to build a bunch of temporary housing at the facility. So that's the latest that we have on the World Equestrian Games. More and more details will be coming out quickly now, I assume, because there's not that much time left.
Very true.
All right.
Very true. All right. Well, we've got our first guest on the phone, and he is none other than the great mastermind behind Omega Alpha. Good morning, Dr. Chang.
Good morning, Jamie. Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Good morning.
We are great. Thank you so much for joining us. Where in the world are you? I always like to ask you.
Oh, I'm at home today, but in Toronto. And we have nice balmy weather, relatively speaking. You know, we got up to about 14 degrees yesterday, centigrade that is, not Fahrenheit, for all our American listeners. It was nice and balmy.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to talk a little bit today about antioxidants, and I'm assuming that you usually pick these topics depending on the time that we're going to need to do this. So I'm assuming it's time for some antioxidants, or is that a year-round thing?
Antioxidants are a year-round thing, but, you know, the reason we thought we'd talk about antioxidants is because there's a lot of misconceptions about antioxidants out there. And one of the things is that we at Omega Alpha like to clarify misconceptions, et cetera, that you hear about out there. Antioxidants are very necessary for all animals, for all people, et cetera. All living beings have antioxidant systems that's native to their body. What antioxidants, they're very useful. And the reason there's such a big focus on antioxidants now is that if you believe that in the free radical theory of diseases, what it basically, in a nutshell, will say to you is that free radicals cause all diseases. They either cause it or they make it worse, right? And so the nice thing about antioxidants is that what they will do, they basically act like a sponge, just soak up free radicals and inhibit or prevent the damage that would cause by antioxidants, right?
Now,
however,
I believe, I believe we talked about free radicals before, but refresh my memory on where we get, they're kind of everywhere, right?
Free radicals are generated almost everywhere. They're generated by the body itself. They're very active chemical species, and the body actually uses free radicals to destroy things like bacteria and viruses, right? Where you run into trouble with free radicals is that if the body produces it it's not being controlled properly, that's when you get into trouble with free radicals, right? Free radicals can also come from the environment, right? You know, you're driving behind a bus that's spewing a lot of stuff out its tailpipe. You know, that stuff, there's a lot of free radicals in there. You eat an apple that has been sprayed with a pesticide, and not 100% of it is gone. That in itself can generate free radicals, right? I mean, even the process of inflammation in the body, the white blood cells produces free radicals, and the free radicals in the white blood cells actually kill off the viruses and the bacteria. So control of free radicals is a double-edged sword sometimes. Now, what we find, almost all foods will have will have antioxidants in them, all right? One of the things you have to realize about antioxidants, not every single antioxidant will quench every single free radical. So there's a hierarchy of antioxidants, right? One of the things you have to be aware of also is that where the free radical attack is happening. Sometimes if you have it at the level of the cell wall, so what you would see there is inflammation in the skin, right? And you know that sloughing away of the skin and the breaking down of the skin, that's caused by a free radical mechanism, right? So if you want to control that, you have to load up with antioxidants that will target the skin, right? So what we have a product called Vantiox. Vantiox has vitamin C and vitamin E in it. Now, the reason that's important, C and E, well, it has selenium, zinc, etc. But the C and E is very important because vitamin E, how it works is that it works at the cell wall level. So meaning it gets embedded in the cell wall. Now, if you remember a cell is basically like a big cardboard box. You have the cardboard box, and then you have all the stuff that's on the inside of the cardboard box. The stuff that's on the inside of the cardboard box is the cell contents. The cardboard box is your cell wall. Now, in that cell wall, you know, unlike a cardboard box, there's nothing embedded in the wall. But in real life, in the cell wall, you have things like proteins, you have things like vitamins, you have a whole bunch of different things that are in that cell wall. One of the things is vitamin E. And what vitamin E does is that if you get a free radical attack at the level of the cell wall, vitamin E will soak that up and stop it from degrading the cell wall. Degradation of the cell wall, why that's bad is because if you get that broken up, what will happen is that you have a lot of stuff that's on the inside will leak to the outside, and that causes cell death. And cell death, as you will see, is caused on a bigger scale, microscopic level. You'll see a sloughing off of the skin as an example of that. So now the vitamin C is important is because of what the vitamin C does is that the vitamin C recharges that vitamin E, because once that vitamin E gets used up, right, it's very difficult to get the vitamin E out of the cell wall and back in. So what happens is the vitamin C then comes along and just regenerates that vitamin E so it's active again. Now, that's only one of the antioxidants. There's a whole slew of different antioxidants out there. You know,
oh my gosh, can I just
fruits,
stop you for a second?
Vegetables, et cetera. For sure.
You're amazing. Like, this is the best explanation of this I have ever heard in my entire life. And I also want to say that I think the scariest thing I've ever heard is cell death. Gosh.
Well, we do have a lot of cell death going on in our body, because basically what it does, it's a way of regenerating new tissue. Right, and for tissue to regenerate, so cells have to die, right? And that's how basically it happens.
That's unbelievable. So what a great explanation. So the Vantiox you guys have is for more skin type things, or is that
no all types of things? I only talk about skin because skin is visual and everybody sees that, right? But when you think of things like ulcers, right? Inflammation, right? All that is caused by a free radical mechanism, right? So if you have things that will help control that, right? Now, people will say, well, if you need free radicals to kill off bacteria, are we going to destroy that ability of to fight off disease? I said the answer to that is no, because For this to happen, you have to have so much into you, right, that it dominates your entire body system. And believe you me, you will never be able to consume enough for that to happen, right? So, okay. Long and short of it all, it's good to supplement with extra antioxidants.
Okay, so What is the type of horse? Say I've either got a big fancy show horse or I could have a backyard horse. What types of horses need this extra supplementation of antioxidants?
All horses need that. Even people need that. Okay. But the thing with antioxidants, et cetera, is that it is not like, let's say you didn't take it, it doesn't mean that you're going to show up and you'll be disease ridden, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Inflammation running amok, et cetera. What these antioxidants do, it helps keep you healthy. Right? Mm-hmm. That's the key to the game here, is to keep you healthy. Because I always say, especially for people in the performance horse business, be it show jumping, be it dressage, be it flat racing, etc., barrel racing, etc., reining, all these people, I will say, if you have a horse that's healthy, a healthy, mediocre horse will outperform a superstar that is sick, that's down and out because he's sick. And basically what you're trying to do with antioxidants is to keep your horse healthy.
Oh my gosh, Dr. Chang, this is going to cost me so much money, this interview. Holy smoke. every time we talk to him, I'm like, oh God, I got to go back to OmegaAlphaEquine.com.
But I was going to say, everybody who owns a horse knows that a horse is an expensive hobby.
Of course. No, of course. I know. And this is just the best explanation of free radicals and antioxidants that I've ever heard. Now, you can actually hear more, our listeners can, because you guys are going to do a webinar on it. And so, obviously, Omega Alpha is committed to helping you learn more about their equine products by offering free teleseminars and web classrooms. They're held the last Monday of the month, 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern. The next webinar is April 24th, where you guys are going to explore antioxidants, herbs, vitamins, and minerals even further. And there is a Q&A after the webinar. So you can register by just calling 1-800-651-3172. Ask for Joanne to get your web classroom address and entry code. It's really easy. You can also go to the Omega Alpha website for all the information you need to sign up. OmegaAlphaEquine.com. Is there more that we can learn at the teleseminar than what you've just explained?
Definitely, because I just basically touched on the subject, because there's so much more about antioxidants that people need to know. Because I know when you go out there and you talk about antioxidants, people talk about things like the ORAC value. Well, the ORAC value really means nothing. ORAC is just a measure of how the antioxidants will fare against what we call oxygen free radicals or oxygen producing free radicals. And those ones are just a minority in the whole scheme of things of free radicals. Right?
Dr. Chang, I determined I was really sick last week. My free radicals were gone. They were just gone.
On vacation.
They were just out of there.
Sometimes be careful for what you wish for, because if you had too much of those free radicals, what can be bad can be a lot worse. It's all about balance, my friend. All about balance. You got to be able to balance the free radicals as well as the antioxidants.
All right, Glenn, next time you go to the Kentucky Horse Park, first you've got to go to OmegaAlphaEquine.com and get yourself some Vaniox, and then you're going to have to suck that down every morning with
every
your
morning.
Cup of coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Need something.
Oh, well.
Well, we do appreciate
you.
Dr. Chang. You're just amazing. Your wealth of knowledge and your ability to share it in a way that people understand is just incredible. You should have your own supplement company or something. Jeez.
We'll try that. Well, thank you for
thank
having
you, Dr.
me on
Chang.
This morning.
Thank you. OmegaAlphaEquine.com.
And of course, you can find him also on Facebook. Just search for Omega Alpha Equine and you'll find him on Facebook as well. Well, now you are going to bail out on us here shortly, but I wanted to talk to you first. Why again are you there? Because I said on Friday.
Why are you?
I was kind of out of it last week. And then when you told me on Friday you were going away for 3 weeks, I had no clue. I just didn't remember anything about it. So what are you there for again?
It's the advanced course. So if you guys remember, I came and I did the join up and long lining and all these courses last summer, and then I came back in the fall to do the test. Remember the big test I had to take?
Yes, yes.
That's to make it to the advanced course.
Ah, so this is it. How many will be there? Will it just be you or are there some others?
No, there's 7 people taking the advanced course, and this is crazy. I am the only American that's doing the course. 2 people from South Africa.
Oh, wow.
One for these countries all over the globe. I'm going to meet people from all over the world. It's so cool. I'll have more details on all of that probably, you know, after I start at 9 this morning. So I'll know more about who I'm going to be hanging out with for the next 3 weeks. But it's so international here. It's so cool. Like last night I was hanging out with Denise from Germany and one of the girls from Venezuela and the other girls from Sweden. And we're just all sitting out having beers. Like that's totally normal to hang out, you know, talking horses with people all over the globe. It's so cool. And then like talking about the different vaccines that the countries require and the different places and what they're called. And it was just really interesting. So I'll know more about that, but this is the advanced course.
So what happens when you graduate from the advanced course?
When you finish the advanced course, you then have to be invited back to test. Because when you do the advanced test, your test taker giver is Monty Roberts himself.
Ah.
Talk about freaking nerve-wracking.
So if you suck in the advanced course, they just don't invite you back? Is that...
They're like, see you later. Bye-bye. Thanks for coming.
You don't deserve to be testing with Monty.
I know. It's so crazy. So this one, I went and met all the horses. There was a hoarder up in Northern California who, I guess he just had 300 horses running around on his property. Stallions, mares, geldings, everything, all untouched. And then he died. And then somebody came in and they were like, this is a problem. So we have 17 horses in here that came from there. There's 4 or 5 stallions, and they're all just a total mix of breeds. I mean, they're indistinguishable. One of them actually has a BLM brand, one of the geldings. But the rest
mostly
of them
just
are
mutts, huh?
Just mutts. Yeah. And mutt stallions have ginormous cojones. Oh my gosh. So the last week is going to be a gelding clinic, but the first, so basically they have 2 types of horses that we're going to learn to deal with. And they call them starter horses, which we're going to start horses here. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited. Do starter horses. And you know, hopefully by the end of the 3 weeks, we're riding them around. No problem. And then the other are gentlers, they call them. And these are horses that are untouched. So I think wild Mustang. So I'm going to learn how to do both of them. I'm so excited. It's going to be so interesting. And you know, the intro course is procedures and kind of getting muscle memory and learning all of these things. And now this is like getting in the meat of it.
Well, you be careful out there. And
just like my husband, you're going to get hurt. I'm here to learn.
Well, be careful while you're learning. Okay. We both know you, so be careful. And we'll talk to you. You're going to bail out on us now before we get to our next guest, because you do have to get ready to start your first day at school. And then we'll talk to you on Wednesday morning.
All right, and I'll have a microphone. I'm sorry, boss. I screwed up.
That's right. I've gone to many shows and forgotten half my equipment, so I get it. I can't tell you how many laptop power cords I have, because I always forget those. Just every time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Have fun out there at Monty Roberts' place.
All right. Thank you so much. Love you guys. Fader Geld, everybody. Have a great day.
Well, we are going to go now to our next guest. We're going to change gears a little bit. And, you know, we talk about Western dressage quite a bit, even have an episode that we do once a month on our dressage radio show. But we have Jen Johnson here with us. She is with the North American Western Dressage Association. Hey, good morning, Jen.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, where are you located, you yourself?
I live in Minnesota.
Ah, okay. Good. Well, it's finally starting to warm up there, so you guys can actually practice more again.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Well, now, we've talked about quite a bit about Western dressage, but we wanted to talk about two different things that you have going on. And one of them is a class that I had not heard of before. Jennifer accidentally called it 6 feet under the ground earlier, but that wasn't it. It's actually called 6 feet on the ground, which is a whole different thing. So tell us.
It is a whole different thing. I tell you. Well, we try to keep things kind of light around here, and I'll tell you how we came up with that name. We actually put it out to our members on Facebook for a contest to name this new program and come up with something that's kind of catchy. So 6 feet on the ground, you know, we got lots of submissions, and then we voted on the best name that was catchy and fun and light, and it's called 6 feet on the ground. And it's no surprise because, you know, we're North American Western Dressage, but if you spell out NAWD, we call ourselves the Naughty Group. And I tell you, it never ends.
Well, now tell us about this class. Is it a halter class?
It is not a halter class. The horses can be shown in halters. We also allow your traditional classical cabossons. And basically this class is all about helping your horse move in a way that's going to be beneficial when it comes under saddle. You're teaching your horse to, you know, have freedom of movement and the engagement and to use its back properly and put all its feet in the right places and the right timing, rhythm and relaxation. So we actually judge it based on the training scale. So it's not, you're not being judged on where you're standing or
how pretty your shirt is.
We don't give credit for fancy clothes. You know, you should look neat and clean, obviously, but it's all about helping your horse move properly.
So what's the class look like? What do you actually do?
Well, you start, it kind of looks a little bit like a classical dressage class, except we don't use the letters because you would be walking way too much and way too far and people would get very tired. So we say, you know, start, walk in, enter, and walk your horse 10 to 20 feet and then halt. And you salute the judge, and we're looking for, you know, the horse to be moving forward freely in a straight line. And then in the halt, we're looking for a balanced halt as they move a little bit further up in the levels. We will look for a square halt, but definitely it's, you know, judged based on classical dressage principles. So rhythm and relaxation are key. So after the halt, you know, the horse might be asked to walk a circle 10 feet away from the handler to the left and to the right. They might be asked to do a turn on the forehand or a turn on the haunches. And it's a series of things that you're instructed. Here's what the judge wants to see, this and then the next thing. And at the end, you halt and salute facing the judge, just like your dressage class.
Now, is it, can you do it liberty or do you have to be in hand?
You could do it liberty, but you're not going to get any extra points.
Okay, got it.
Because everything has to be, we have to look at things from a system of fairness. And you're judged based on how well your horse is moving and exhibiting principles of the training scale. So if you did it at liberty, you would still be judged on the same criteria and you're not going to get any extra points.
Got it. That makes sense.
So, yeah. So if we're talking about the training scale, am I to guess that when the judge is watching you perform the movements in the test. Mm-hmm. And I watched some videos this morning, so I have a little bit of a clue about what happens. You go in and the movement says the horse needs to trot a circle clockwise or two circles clockwise. Mm-hmm. Is the judge going to take into consideration as part of the, what's the word they use in the dressage test? The it's gone to me right now, but it's part of what he is judging the engagement of the horse, whether or not he's bent the correct direction and things like that. Is that part of it?
That's exactly right. Yes. The first key is rhythm and relaxation. And then we're going to look for balance, you know, both lateral and side to side. I can't remember the word for that either. Lateral lateral is side to side. So lateral and longitudinal or horizontal balance. You know, we're not going to look for a horse. We're going to look for a horse that is, you know, stepping up nicely underneath himself with his hind legs. He's not falling on his forehand. He's not, you know, falling to the outside or to the inside. We're going to look for the bend on the circle, which is in dressage, as you may or may not know, it's called straightness. And straightness is not necessarily straight, but the horse, it means that the horse's body is matching the shape that he is traveling on. So if he's straight, he's straight. But if he's on a circle, his body is actually bent to match that curvature of the circle.
So give me kind of an overview of what skill sets would be required for different, and how many levels are there? Is it just the beginning level, or are there several levels? Because in traditional dressage, whether it's English or Western, ridden dressage, now we're going to have all the different dressages. In ridden dressage, you start out at a very low level where the horse is simply asked to walk and trot or walk and jog. And it moves very gradually. We're going to walk, jog, and look, or walk, trot, and canter. And then you get up into lateral movements, and then you get up into really complicated lateral movements. At this point in time, for the in-hand dressage, for lack of a better term, that the 6 feet on the ground is using, where is it starting now? Are there plans to eventually create lots of levels?
Yes. Right now, we actually have 10 different tests. And
wow.
We have not, we expanded. Last year, we started with six tests. But this program is becoming so popular. It's becoming such a great hit with people who own horses that are very young and not ready to be started under saddle. And also, and this kind of surprised me a little, with horses that are very old and not able to manage, not able to be ridden anymore, either because of, you know, just old age and arthritis, and some of them have metabolic issues and things like that. So they're not able to be ridden anymore, but this is giving people a chance to engage their horse's mind and still maintain that partnership with them, even though they can't be ridden. They don't want them just standing around eating all the time, because that's not good for anybody. And the other
that's something that fascinated me, is that there are so many demographics of horse and human that this can appeal to.
Every single discipline on the planet can benefit from more work on the ground. It just, you know, there's something in being able to actually see your horse. When you're riding, you can't see your horse. You can't see that its hind end is engaged, that it's moving properly, that it's matching the curve of the circle. You can't see that. You have to learn to feel it. But when you are on the ground, you can actually see what's happening, and it makes that so much more powerful. And in fact, that's extended to the fact that most of our programs are virtual programs, which means you simply submit a video for judging, and then you get back the video along with the judge's feedback, and you can actually see what the judge is talking about and review that video over and over and over again as you get ready for the next show.
And now,
I think I probably went off track and didn't answer the question. What was the question?
Well, that's okay. Let's move on while we still have time here to the Festival for the Horse. What's that?
That is going to be kind of our very first major live show, but it's more than that. We have had our North American Western Dressage members asking us to put on a national show, and they've been asking for this for probably 3 years now. When are you guys going to do a national show? When are you going to do a national show? And we have so far not done it. But this year we're going to bring out Festival of the Horse, which will include all of the different North American Western dressage disciplines, the 6 feet on the ground, our brand new long reining program, which is kind of moving up from there. And then we are going to also be doing our ranch riding, the trail, which is a little bit, I guess you could call it trail dressage, but we kind of stay away from the word dressage when we're talking about that, because it is, you know, Western ride. We want it to feel welcome to, welcoming to Western riders. So we're using the word, you know, trail, and we will of course have our Western dressage classes. And we're also partnering with Friends of Sun Horses in putting on this event. And Friends of Sun Horses is a organization that is known for their fight against the soaring and the huge shoes, right, in the, and the shod. But Friends of Sun Horses is so much more than that. They're all about education, and they're specialists in the gated dressage community. So we're partnering with them to bring in a gated dressage clinician and judge to welcome those riders as well. So it's going to be a show on the weekend, but before that, we're having a learning opportunity. And I guess I kind of think of it as horse camp. You know, when you were a kid, did you ever go to horse camp? I didn't get to go to horse camp. But when you go and you hang out and you all learn together, there'll be demonstrations, lots of trail riding, and it's going to be at the Von Holten Ranch in Mora, Missouri. It's at the foot of the Ozark Mountains. So they have over 20 miles of beautiful trails. They're very well marked. And they have hosted the American Competitive Trail Horse Association several times. So they have lots of obstacles and are very familiar with letting people try new things. So we're bringing Dan James, and we've got quite a few of the North American Western Dressage professional members coming in to do demonstrations and let people just ride new things and try new things and just have fun with their horse. So it's going to be a great event for all of us.
And this is the August 9th. It's at in Mora, Missouri. And where can people find out more? I just saw Dan, by the way, at Road to the Horse. Spent a little time chatting with him.
Yeah, he's such a great guy.
Yeah, you're gonna have fun with him around. And then where can people find out more? And if they want to attend, how do they do it?
If they go to www.naughtyhorse.org, it's NAWDHORSE.org, and go to our calendar events. It's there. We're ready to take signups, and we're getting lots in, so it's going to be a lot of fun. It's also during the Missouri State Fair, so it is a
very busy time. Are we working on desensitization too? Are we working on desensitization too at the same time? We're going to run them down through the middle of of all the rides.
No. We're not. The location is not at the Missouri.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
No. But the location on Von Holten Ranch is a private facility. They have a covered arena. They have 20 miles of trails. So it's completely separate. It's probably about an hour from where the fair is being held.
That's probably far enough.
My point is that there's a lot to do in Missouri that time of the year. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and we're expecting a great turnout.
Very good. Thank you, Jen. It is NorthAmericanWesternDressage.org is where you can find the website. And we appreciate you stopping by and letting us know about it. We have a lot of listeners up in that area, too.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jen.
Thanks for having me on. I do appreciate it.
Good luck with it.
All right. Have a great day.
Dan always livens things up. You bring Dan James in, it's livened up automatically. So that's...
Well,
He's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think that's important because when you're doing, especially if you're doing, if there's any in-hand work happening, you need to have pretty high energy from the human being because it's not exactly riveting.
Right. Well, that, and it's interesting, though, you did bring up this morning how many in-hand different kinds, you know, not just what we're used to seeing with in-hand classes are changing now. Between all of the gymnastics and everything that's happening, there's a lot more in-hand options now if you're in the horse world than there ever was before.
Oh, all kinds of cool stuff. And like she said, it's the human being sometimes wants to go out and do fun, cool, not just improve their horsemanship, but some people are motivated by the competitive urge. I want to get better because I love to compete versus I wanted a bit better just for the sake of getting better. And this gives a lot of options for a human being who can't or doesn't want to ride. It gives a lot of options for the equid who either can't or isn't ready to be ridden. For example, with Scooter, he likes doing this stuff, but it's also nice because being a driving pony and being a tiny driving pony, it's not like I can get on his back and school him when you're not driving him.
Right.
Not going to happen. He's tiny.
Right.
So this is a great way to, you know, well, let's go out and test the skills. And now you have the extreme trail type competitions like the AQHA has where they involve obstacles and they're judged basically the same way. But now you also have something that's really more related to dressage that you can also work at and compete on. So I think it's pretty cool. And you can, the next door neighbor has a horse that has some soundness issues that he's perfectly happy to be a pasture pal. He can be lunged. He can be round penned. He can do all kinds of cool stuff, but you can't put weight on his back anymore. What a great venue for all those horses out there who have that. And some of them are going to be senior horses who are really professors. They're going to know all this stuff and they can go out and teach young or new riders, all this cool groundwork stuff. I'm just very excited about it. Can you tell?
I can tell. All right, let's head over now to our friend Leslie at Horse Nation. Hi, Leslie.
Good morning.
You know, before we get to your guest, and I'll have him ready here in a second, I wanted to bring up, of course, we have to bring up April Fool's Day. So now, I was looking for Goat Nation this morning, but I couldn't find it.
You couldn't find Goat Nation?
I was looking.
It's the next big thing.
I know. Well, it is very big. You know, go to our auditor page, and there's a lot of talk about goats. That's for sure. You know what would be bigger than Goat Nation, though, would be Chicken Nation. I'm telling you. You guys seriously should look at doing a Chicken Nation. Chickens are huge.
Are they?
Oh.
I mean, I guess there are a lot of chickens in the world.
There's a lady that's on here on Facebook that, what's it called, Jennifer? I forget what her is. Chicken Whisperer. She has 500,000 followers. Or now it's probably over 600,000. And it's all about chicken. Chickens are huge business right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, you should do Chicken Nation. I'm sure that it would be popular.
Can chickens sing like goats can?
Chickens can do anything you don't want them to do, just like goats. Exactly. Jamie could actually write for your Chicken Nation. She has so many of them.
Yeah.
Was that the only April Fool's thing that you did over at Horse Nation?
That was what we did over at Horse Nation. Over at Eventing Nation, we announced the Kentucky Horse Park's plans to unveil a new life-size bronze statue of Michael Young, actually, at Rolex.
That one was almost believable.
I don't know if you heard that news.
That was almost believable, I got to tell you. And I just heard he's coming back, too. So you might as well just add a notch to the statue because...
Yeah. It was going to be really cool. It was going to be very similar to the Bruce Davidson statue, this iconic statue outside the Rolex Stadium.
Only in German.
But, modern updates, interactive fountains strategically placed at Fisher O'Connor's feet, his mirror that he has won Rolex on twice, to create the illusion of a dramatic splash into water, and a Vegas-style laser light show synced to German techno music to keep crowds entertained in between horses coming through the head of the lake.
It all sounds good, actually. I want to see it.
Like, you can actually steal that.
Pay
to the
horse there.
That was actually pretty good, I got to tell you.
We do what we can.
I got to tell you, though, that your competitors over in England had beat you guys.
Who's our competitors?
The Whole Horse and Hound, Vallegro coming out of retirement to event. Was pretty good.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. They had that article was pretty well done, I have to say. They might have had you this year. Because that one almost caught me. I was reading it and it was going, wow, well, that's kind of cool for him. And then I was going, oh, wait a minute here. Because I'm not used to it from Horse and Hound.
Well, you know, Horse and Hound, so, you know, we are on this side of the pond, and fake news is a little bit of a sore subject,
right.
I think, for many Americans this year. And so we actually had a sort of ethical discussion at one of our editorial meetings about
how politically correct you had to be,
whether April Fool's fake news was even appropriate this year. But we decided to do it, but maybe, you know, dial it in from,
from track,
usual
from the Clydesdales
you
running all over the highway.
Sort of maybe believable, but not quite.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's do this. Let me contact your guest. We are going to have a very special guest, aren't we?
Yeah. We've got a series of, and I'm doing the Mongol Derby for those just tuning in. And we've got a series of Derby related guests coming up on my future segments here on Monday mornings. And today we've got our guest is Keith Swenson from Stone Horse Expeditions, which is based in Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia, where I'll be, sort of like the meetup point for the Mongol Derby this year. And he runs sort of a horse trekking and expeditions business for equestrian tourists who maybe would like to enjoy them, go on a ride on Mongolian horses and have less chance
of dying than you. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Yeah.
Keith, are you there?
I am. I'm just listening to you. Yes.
Well, you know, with Leslie going on the Mongol Derby, we've been trying to do some segments on what her life is going to be like for that time over there. And you actually provide what I hope is a more pleasant experience for people wanting to ride in Mongolia.
Yeah, we're not masochistic. We like to treat people nicely.
See, he even thinks you're masochistic, Leslie. He even thinks you're crazy. So now you're at the beginning of the Mongol Derby, where it starts? Kind of?
Well, I don't know where the Mongol Derby is going to be this year. It's in different places each year, I think. But no, we are located not too far from Ulaanbaatar, the capital city, about an hour's drive out, and on the edge of the Gorky Tereliç National Park, which combined with another park make up, you know, the biggest roadless area in Mongolia and a great place for horse riding.
Mm. I can imagine. All yours, Leslie. I'm sorry.
Okay. And you offer, so how you take folks out on treks, horseback treks, and how long do they last? And what are, what can people expect from those?
Well, these are, they're real expedition type travel. We carry everything. There's no vehicle support or anything. So we pack our horses in and everything we need. We'll go out for anywhere from 8 to 12, 14 days at a time, depending on the trip.
Mm-hmm.
And we camp, and we will move every day, basically. We might take a day's rest and spend one or two nights at some really nice place.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere in the park, we'll run it. We visit a remote gear or yurt camp, where we'll mm-hmm. treat people to a night in the yurt where they can sleep in a bed and enjoy some Mongolian hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
And before we move on, so
that sounds
that's what we do.
that sounds delightful compared to what I'm going to be doing.
Now, what you're going to be doing is quite interesting, but you must be a pretty tough lady, really. This is, you know, it's going to be good.
We'll find out.
I think you'll really enjoy it. Yeah, you will. But I think you'll really get to respect the Mongolian horse when you do that. You'll see how tough they are. They might be smaller, but they're really tough animals.
Yeah, talk to me about Mongolian horses. I know there's such a unique breed of horse. How are they different from what we're used to in Western riding?
Well, I mean, they are horses. Horses are horses, so they're going to behave like horses. But they're a little bit smaller, but they just have an amazing stamina. Mm-hmm. On our treks, you know, we travel at various speeds, but we do a lot of trotting. But our horses can drop into a trot, and they can keep that up all day long. You know, they can just keep going. That's their preferred gait and what they'd rather be doing. But what you're going to be experiencing, you've got to be pacing yourself over, 7 days? Is that right?
Something like that. 7 to 10. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
probably
7 to 10
for me.
Maybe 12. Matter of fact, can you come retrieve her at some point when she's lost in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, we can give you some kind of a buzzer. You can just send
flares
out a signal
or something. Yeah,
we'll send out an emergency team. But yeah, you'll find they're pretty forgiving. I mean, they're all kind of horses, but pretty much they're easy to ride. Mm-hmm. There's different gaits for them, horses, you know, depending on what size you have. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not all small horses. There are some bigger horses here, depending on what region of Mongolia they come from. Mm-hmm. And some of them have these, some of our horses, they're a little bit choppy and they're trotting, but some are just absolutely smooth, you know, almost like a gaited horse. Mm-hmm. And my horse that I've been riding for the past 15 years, I've had him a long time, he's just so nice to ride and, you know, on a trot, you're just going along really smoothly for hours. Mm-hmm. But again, they're just tough, forgiving. You've got some horses that are kind of wild, but you want to try and choose one that's going to be a good mover, but easy to handle.
Mm-hmm. Now, this breed was originally war horses, right? Like most of them. But why were they so small? So that's what I'm curious about.
Well, you know, these are not too far from the wild horse, from the Shevolsky, or what they call in Mongolia, the tak is a term for wild horse here. You know, they've got one less gene or chromosome, you know, than the domestic horse. So the Mongolian horse, or the Central Asian horse, is probably the original domestic horse, or stemming from the original domestic horse. And they're a little bit smaller, but, you know, they're the most genetically diverse horse. So basically most horses in the world, are all generations of horses that have come from Central Asia are pretty, you know, you can trace them back to this origin. So this would be the original domestic horse. Mm-hmm.
Because that, you know, if we go back in time and we take a look at it, these horses would have been, the stamina makes sense if they were used as war horses, and they were one of the first, actually, in Mongolia, was one of the first armies that used horses successfully. They were well known for their mounted armies, right?
They developed, through their hunting tactics, they developed a technique where they would attack at lightning speed in force, and they developed the stirrup, you know, in Central Asia, where they could stand in their saddles on a pretty stable platform, so they were able to have a platform they could shoot their bows from. And then they also developed the compound bow, a short compound bow that they could shoot from either side, you know, instead of these long bows that they could only shoot from one side. So that's what made them so versatile and so quick, and where they could overwhelm the enemy very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Let's not give Leslie one of those bows. It'd be too dangerous. I'm sure she doesn't have one of those.
Well, I keep thinking, I'm just like, well, thank goodness for Mongolia. Without stirrups, you know, it would be no stirrup November every, you know, 12 months of the year.
Yeah.
That's funny.
It would be a bit hard to ride, yeah. It wouldn't be as comfortable.
So back to your expeditions you do, what level of rider would you recommend for doing something? Where, one, somebody who's a bit more of an adventurous spirit to do this in the first place, but what level of rider?
Well, if you're an advanced novice, you know, you can probably do this easily. or a novice rider, and you've got and you're able to trot and canter comfortably, you can probably do this because you'll learn every day because you'll be riding all day with us. So you'll be learning as you go, and you know, seeing how we ride and learning how the Mongolian horses move. But anything from an advanced novice right up to an expert, because the horses we have, we can put people on them that are not so experienced, but we can also put an experienced rider on the same horse, and that person can make the horse do anything, go as fast as he wants, do anything, go, you know, travel anywhere. So basically all levels of riders. And we do recommend people have a bit of riding experience and have, you know, the basics down so they can enjoy the ride and not have to worry about, you know, how to ride a horse. Mm-hmm.
Everybody that goes into Mongol Derby gets violently ill from the food or the fermented bear's milk. I'm not sure which. Do you serve better food, or can they look forward to getting violently ill as well?
Well, no, we serve better
okay,
food.
Okay, good. All right, good.
We've got to guarantee that. We say our food is, we have good camp food. It's varied. We say it's locally sourced and internationally seasoned.
Oh, there you go. So can Leslie eat with you while she's there? Because she's...
Yeah. We can send some Meals on Wheels out.
There you go.
But no, you will enjoy the whole atmosphere around the Derby. I think it's pretty exciting. It's pretty exhausting. I mean, you're going. I'm assuming you're in good shape and mm-hmm. an endurance rider and ready for that. But I think there's a whole camaraderie that you'll build up with the other riders and the Mongolians who are organizing it and putting it all together for you.
Well, that's a good point. And, you know the Mongol people. How do they feel about something like this, about the Mongol Derby? Is it fun for them? Is it something that they think is pretty cool? Or,
well, sure.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, they get really into this kind of stuff, this competition on horse riding and these kind of events. So they love it. They put it together. And they do a pretty good job of organizing it. It's all done in their own style, of course, which you'll see and you'll find out about. But they do like it, and they admire the international riders that come. They know a good rider when they see one. And they know a bad rider when they see one.
No pressure, Leslie.
No pressure.
Actually, we pick on Leslie. She is a good. She's an inventor and a good rider. And you know what? Those horses are going to be right your size because Leslie's like 5'2". So she's petite. Yeah. So those horses will be right up your alley.
Yeah, actually, my horse, my main squeeze right now is a 14 hand pony. So, I'll be good.
Well, you'll be seeing horses about that size when you're here. Mm-hmm. You know, they are smaller, of course, but they're about 14 hands, you know, around that size. Mm-hmm. And don't call them ponies. You know, if you're standing next to a horse, you know, you call them. They don't like to be called ponies. Yeah.
I would never disrespect a Mongolian horse by calling it a pony.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that horse is going to make your life miserable for the next 7 days.
So. Like, I'll show you.
I was looking at some of the pictures on your website, which is I always get this wrong. It's stonehorsemongolia.com, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Stonehorsemongolia.com. And wow, the scenery there is incredible.
It is. I'm still amazed every year I go out. Every trip we go out is different because the seasons change from trip to trip. I mean, the scenery changes and the new flowers that come out throughout the summer and then as it changes into autumn and winter. Mm-hmm. So it's always changing. And I think a lot of people have this impression that Mongolia is the Gobi Desert. And only the Gobi Desert, and that's one ecosystem in the south of the country, and that's also is quite varied as a desert as well, with 4,000 meter peaks and valleys that have green grass in them. But up in the north, where we ride in the Henti Mountains, where the Gorky Trails National Park is, and the Henti strictly protected areas, it's kind of a biodiversity hotspot. And it's full of, grasses and herbs and a lot of medicinal plants. Mm-hmm. So it's a great medicine cabinet for the horses, you know, when they're eating all these different variety of plants and herbs. They are ingesting stuff that is really healthful for them.
And I'm looking at the pictures. It looks like the Pacific Northwest is actually Oregon, Washington. Mm-hmm. It looks like that area when you take a look at the pictures.
In the... in July, you know, June, July, and early August, it's like that because it's so lush. That's the rainy season. But it's also like a lot of terrain that we'll see. It looks like, you know, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, yeah, this kind of areas.
Mm-hmm. Now, you don't sound Mongolian, I have to ask. So how did you end up there?
Well, I'm an American, and I ended up here because my wife originally came here to do some development work. And so I joined her after a few years. I was working in the Middle East. I used to run I used to be the field manager for a very large wildlife sanctuary in Oman, the Sultanate of Oman. And I came here to help with the park management system as they were developing and modernizing to international standards, the park management, and with ranger training and park management training, putting these kind of programs in place. And of course, parks and, to get around these parks is horses, were used quite a bit. So that's what I started doing.
What a fascinating life. So,
yeah. Oh, Keith is, I was just reading about him, and he's, you know, mentioned the U.S. And New Zealand, but you worked in Antarctica and, mm-hmm. I mean, all over the world. It's really, I guess it speaks to Mongolia that you decided to set up your business there after having, you know, kind of been all over the place and seen it all.
All right. Tell us about your craziest adventure out on horseback. What was the one that you remember and you still tell the story today? And it's either one of your guests or something you met along the way.
Well, I'll tell you about years ago when I first got here. After a year or so, Mongolians will if they like you and you become friends with them and they have horses, they will gift you a horse. If they've got like 300 horses, they just give you one. So some of the herders that I was, acquainted with and became sort of friends with, they gave me a horse, a couple of horses. And I went out to the eastern steppe, about 150 miles or kilometers from Ulaanbaatar to get it. But this was in early November, and winter's just setting in. So I had to ride these horses back, three of them, actually. And the herder was going to take me out there, and we were going to. I was going to ride them back, and he was going to rendezvous with me. And this is across open steppe. There's not a tree in sight. And we went and we found the horses. He picked out the three that were being given to me, and then I would ride them back the next day. Unfortunately, the next day, my herder friend had a little bit too much vodka, so he kind of disappeared. And I was left with the horses, so I had to make my way back. And as the day wore on, you could see the storm was moving in. And this is going to be one of the first winter storms coming in. And we're going across the steppe, just me and three horses. And this herder did not show up at the rendezvous point. Oh. So it's around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, early November. It's getting dark earlier. So I decided to move on. And as the, you know, it started getting darker, the snow started coming, and one thing that I still remember to this day, around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you've heard of the expression, a bruised sky?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, well, that's what was happening. The whole sky was looking like this purple and black and blue, and I realized this is going to be a bad storm coming. So I decided I can't wait. There's not a tree in sight, not a hill to hide behind. The wind is picking up. I've got to move on. So I came upon some railroad tracks that I knew ran into Ulaanbaatar. So I started following them, and by the time I came onto a small settlement of gyrs or yurts. Gyr is the Mongolian word for yurt. And by this time it was snowing and blowing, and I was packed into my saddle with snow and quite cold, hanging on to two other horses. I came upon this gyr, and I only knew a few words of Mongolian. So I just started calling out Zambanu, which means hello, and called out a few times. And finally, some people came out of the gear and looked at me and saw this strange character frozen into a saddle. And the only thing I could think of to say in Mongolian was, I need tea, hot tea.
So, well, that'll work.
That's the only words I knew, you know, really. And so I said, I need tea. And they kind of looked at me, and then they got me out of the saddle, and they took me inside, took the saddle bags off and saddle, and took care of the horses, put them in a small fenced area in a small corral. And I got inside. They got my clothes off me, which were frozen solid, and got me some hot soup and some hot tea, and I spent a couple of days with them. And that's kind of normal. These are herders. They expect people can do that all the time, and they're quite open to anybody visiting them at any time of night and helping people out like that. That's the wonderful thing about herder societies. And well, they're taking people like that because they might be in the same situation.
Well, God, if they hadn't been there, you'd have been dead, frozen to the saddle. Yeah. They'd have found you frozen to the saddle.
Probably.
Jeez.
Yeah, they did. They basically saved my life. So I stayed with them for a few days, and then after the storm broke, I took off, and I gave them some compensation, and I found that they had hay bales so I could feed the horses, and
wow.
Then I headed back to close to Ulaanbaatar, where our staging area is, and back to where our cabins are, and got the horses back.
Okay, so now we keep telling Leslie that she better take an orienteering class because she's kind of directionally challenged. And so would you please reinforce that for us? Just tell her that maybe reading a compass is good.
Well, you know, follow the horse.
Unless he's not going where you want to go.
Yeah, you just put in your coordinates, like there's a hidden
that's right.
little touch pad on their neck, and choop. Go.
Well, this is.
I think they've got to. They should have direction along the way, or people at least urging you to go the right direction,
or at least coming out to find you after you haven't. Yeah. One or the other. Yeah. StonehorseMongolia.com is the website. If you're looking for a true adventure, this is the place to find it. I hope you're writing a book at some point. You personally.
Thinking about it.
You should be writing
a book. We put books together before.
Yeah, you should be writing a book for sure, Keith, with the life you've led. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. And we hope that you don't accidentally run into Leslie.
So nice to talk to you, Keith.
Well, you know, well, look us up when you get here, and we'll try and give you some advice. Maybe beg you not to go. Or
maybe
something.
Some good food. Maybe he can pack some food for you or sneak some food
That's
into
a deal.
Camp.
Save yourself.
Yeah. A brown bag lunch, at least.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
All right. Thanks, Keith.
Thanks, Keith.
All right. Yeah. Bye. Thanks a lot. Bye bye.
Bye.
The pictures are beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are beautiful. But the horses also look tame. So sick. You got that going for you when you ride with him. This isn't the one that Lady Martha rode with, is it?
I don't think so. I do not think so.
Because didn't you say she rode Mongolia,
she
too?
She did. I'll have to find out who,
yeah.
Who she went with. That's yeah.
Okay, well, we need to ask, have you done any additional preparation for your Mongolian adventure?
I had a very serious conversation with my husband who listened to last week's episode.
Uh-oh.
Deeply concerned.
Uh-oh.
So, we talked.
Now,
I got a lecture and...
And the lecture went like, let me see, I'm a horse husband. You're crazy. I'm not letting you go over and do this. I want kids someday. I want to have a family. You're going to be dead. And then I'll never see you again. Something like that?
It was, I mean, something like
pretty
like
close.
That, yeah. Like, oh, it's okay, babe. We're going to go to REI next weekend, go do a little raincoat shopping, or get a compass. We'll all feel better.
And did he?
Oh, well, I think this is our plan. This is our plan for next week.
Oh, next
week. So maybe that'll be my...
Did you have to concede anything?
Yeah.
By the time you were done, did you concede
He's
anything?
Like, you don't even have a good raincoat.
Did he realize what it really was?
What's that?
Till he listened to that show, which was, what, 2 weeks ago we did?
Eric Cooper.
The actual guy from the Mongol Derby who scared everybody to death. So did he realize, did your husband actually realize what it was?
Oh, I thought of something else I did.
Okay.
Well, didn't
you? Avoiding that question.
One day I was thinking about how Eric said I should just go out and ride in all sorts of weather. You know, yeah. He's talking about being out there during the Derby and there's lightning striking down all around him. And there was a storm, a really bad storm that rolled in at the barn and while I was out there. And I thought about going out and there's like lightning, like crazy lightning. And I was like, and like in a little while, there's like some crazy hail. And I thought about going out and riding in it, but I didn't.
Well, it's probably good you didn't. He didn't say to try and get killed before the race.
No.
Although it would be terrifying. This guy was just talking about the steps, you know, with nothing, no trees, nothing for miles and miles and miles. And you're out there during a lightning. What the hell do you do? Hide under the horse?
Right.
Yeah.
I guess. Well, I know. I don't know. I wonder if anyone's been struck by lightning.
Okay, now I want to get back to your husband. Is he okay with this now? Did we calm him down a bit?
No,
or?
He's not okay with this.
I mean, he knows how much money you've paid for this, right?
Yeah, he's not okay. He's not doing very well. But
don't let him listen to today. Oh, let him listen today. This guy was nice, and he made it sound all pleasant.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, freezing to death, you're frozen to your saddle.
Maybe not that part. Maybe we'll cut that part out before he listens. Yeah, maybe we'll just stop the player before that happens.
Yeah, apparently if you can manage to say, I need hot tea in Mongolian, you're gold.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
That's all I gotta do.
You'll be fine.
I need cold vodka.
I thought that was funny. I thought, after he said that, I thought, wow, God, Jen Leslie will fit right in with these people. She'll be fine.
Man.
All right, well, so far we're still going. Husband hasn't said he's going to divorce you or anything.
Not divorce. Nope. We might have to work out some life insurance arrangement before then. But,
you know, I'm not sure. I sold insurance for many, many years. And there's a clause in all insurance policies. It's a suicide clause. And I think actually, if you bought insurance right now, it's 2 years, by the way. You're allowed to commit suicide after 2 years and they'll pay. But in the first two, they won't. I think they're going to consider that suicide if you died during this race.
Darn it.
You might want to check. Ask your agent if that's considered suicide if you go out and get killed in Mongolia during the Mongol Derby. They might consider that suicide.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
yeah. You might want to ask.
But Tommy, you know, I might not be able to leave Tommy that much, you know, in the way of financial, you know, stability, but he can, I mean, but I've got three horses. That's not.
And imagine the memories he will have living with you.
Yeah. All the memories.
Special
memories.
That's right. Yeah. And on that note, we're going to end the show today.
Okay.
You'll be fine. You've done harder things.
Uplifting. Yeah. I love starting my Mondays, starting my week out like this.
All right. Well, you go work on Chicken Nation now. I'm telling you, it's the new hottest thing. And it'll be great. Right. You'll make more money than any of the other websites combined. We'll see you, Leslie. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you all tomorrow morning here on Horses in the Morning. It is, what is it? It's Jumping Day. Wow. Jumping days come around. I imagine that Emily will be talking a little bit about a little competition that happened over the weekend on Jumping Day. So thanks, Leslie. Thank you, Jennifer.
All right. Have a great week, everyone.